Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Sun is shining and you're thinking, I need to get on Tinder. I need to see what's out there. I need to get some things handled in my life and figure out if I'm swiping right or left. Well, that's exactly why we did an old episode. It's Tinder for attorneys. And if it were that easy, gosh, it would be amazing. It may make my life easier too, the swipe right or left right away. But that's not how it works exactly.
I feel like maybe we should stop sharing this idea because as you're talking, my wheels are turning. And I think not long from now, you're going to see a new app brought to you by the makers of How Not to Suck at Divorce. Swipe right, swipe left, get yourself an attorney right here. Can you imagine if you got to read profiles of attorneys? And it was like all these like funny like pictures and you guys had to answer those dumb prompts. In the office, you'll find me.
I'm a bird watcher. I'm not really, but it could be. But literally why we're airing this episode is one, people ask us for referrals for attorneys all the time, and we are happy to give it. But you should know before you go to an attorney's office exactly what you're looking for. And I think this episode gives a little guidance so that you're not just truly swiping right or left.
We don't want you to go into this thing blind. It's great. Not even great. It is crucial that you have a game plan, that you have a strategy for how are you going to choose the right attorney for your divorce. So back by incredibly popular demand on this episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce, we are re-airing Tinder for Attorneys.
When you're interviewing attorneys, you don't want to look for a yes man or a yes woman.
It's not something that would have occurred to me to ask an attorney, what's your style? And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Ooh, I am loving the name of this episode.
Me too. And the episode is called Tinder for Attorneys. And no, we are not talking about dating your divorce attorney.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. It's not that kind of show, guys. So we're talking about the fact that so many people spend more time debating whether they're going to swipe right or left on a person on Tinder, but they hire the very first divorce attorney that they interview, and or they just completely skip the interview process, or they're rushing through everything. So guys, spoiler alert, get your pen, listen up, don't do that. Please don't do that, because your divorce attorney is a very important part of your divorce process. And we are going to give you some concrete do's and don'ts to help you secure a relationship with the right attorney for your case.
And to add to that conversation, today we are bringing on Mr. Max Leanoff, a family law attorney in Miami. He has amazing background, and I will tell you that I've personally worked with him on a matter, and he knows what he's talking about. Max, hello, my friend. It's obligatory. How is the weather in Miami today?
If we're going to stay, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I always, always wanted to feel like Howard Stern. So I now that I have this mic here and I'm ready to take over, okay, I'm ready, okay? But it's a pleasure to be here. I would say that I would swipe left on the weather, okay? It's 90 degrees and sunny out in Miami, but not a place to visit, okay, in August.
I hear that.
The humidity. I can only imagine what that would do to my hair, right? Like, guys. Okay. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you, Mr. Howard Stern there. And I love that was the first person you come up with. I love it. Okay. So I want to start with something, Max. When we talked the other day, I learned that there are three things that you absolutely must hear from your prospective divorce attorney. And the first thing that you said to me, I found kind of surprising, but I really liked it and I can't stop thinking about it. So all the listeners get this. When I asked Max, okay, Max, give me something that you have got to hear in this interview with your divorce attorney. The very first thing that he said to me was, your divorce attorney has to disagree with you on something. And I thought, what? And then as you were explaining to me, you're like, why, it made so much sense. So fill everybody in. Tell us more about disagreeing.
Absolutely. And I will add that the client attorney consultation is obviously an incredibly important step in developing that relationship, and arguably the most important step, because it's critical to developing a good relationship with your attorney, right? Swiping right, so to speak. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you're in these meetings, there's a lot of pressure on the attorney to appease the potential client, tell them what they want to hear. The problem is that then you are developing reasonable and unrealistic expectations to some degree. So when I say your attorney or your potential attorney should disagree with you, when you're interviewing attorneys, you don't want to look for a yes man or yes woman, right? That's not what you're looking for. What you're looking for is an attorney that has the expertise to lead you through what is inevitably a very difficult process, and trying to maximize the results and minimize stress. So oftentimes a client will come in, or a potential client will come in, and want the sun, the moon, and the stars. And it's important that that potential attorney either disagrees with you or plays devil advocate, so that you understand the other end of that spectrum, because otherwise what you're getting is someone that really just wants to make you happy. And ultimately, if they can't deliver on those results, then it's a problem. You know, it really is. So it's critical to hear the attorney either disagree with you or try to explain that certain things that you may want either may not be accomplished, or in the alternative are not necessarily realistic under the law.
Okay, Max, I like where you're going with this. And it may kind of shock some of our listeners what you just said, and maybe worry them like, oh God, I don't want to go into an initial meeting and fight with this potential lawyer that I'm going to hire. That's not what Max is saying. What another way to think about it, and something when you're interviewing a lawyer to do, is if you are talking to the lawyer and you're talking about your goals and strategy and all that kind of stuff, you as the potential client should ask the lawyer, do my goals seem reasonable? Can we accomplish this? What do you think about that? And that you can get the same exact response as Max is talking about right then and there from a good lawyer. So remember, the lawyer also wants to find good fit clients. So both people are interviewing at that point in time, but that's a way to get a good read, but also know if your realistic expectations could even be met.
What came to my mind when he was saying this to me is that another way you can look at it, listeners, is that their job is to show you perspective. and to show you things from another angle. Because if you just hire a yes man, then it's basically like hiring your girlfriend who you're going to go out to margaritas with, right? They're not an expert. You're not an expert. If you were an expert, you wouldn't be hiring an attorney, right? And we all know that it's necessary. So I think I just found it so fascinating. I really did.
Okay, Max, give us the, you gave us one. What's two and three?
So I think it's important to understand also how the attorney handles the process. In other words, whether the attorney is going to be handling the case himself or herself, or whether he or she has associates or other individuals that are helping that process, because people need to understand who's handling their case, right? So there are plenty of very prominent and renowned law firms that will go ahead and interview and they'll say, I'm handling your case, but then you may not speak to that attorney for another 4 or 5 or 6 months until ultimately when you go to mediation or you go to an evidentiary hearing. And so it's okay if an associate or a paralegal or someone else in the office handles certain components. I've found, for example, that if a client is handling a discovery matter with a paralegal, it tends to be more cost efficient and actually a more time efficient process. So it helps everyone. But you need to understand that. And it's important that you know that, because if you don't, you're in for a huge surprise. There really are a lot of lawyers that delegate. It's part of our job, right? So you need to understand that from the beginning. And that way, you know exactly what you're expecting and also how the bill is going to be handled.
Agreed. And what I would add to that, and that's a really important point that you make, is don't look at it like, oh, you know, I came in to hire Max. And now when I ask Max, you know, who's going to be on my case, he's going to put a junior partner or an associate on and a paralegal. And that's not who I came to hire. That's not the way to look at it. Because what Max said is really important. It's the way to look at it is, how much access will I have to you? And how does the team run in general? And why do you use the team process? For me, I always use a team process, and it does many different things. One, keeps the cost down, just like Max said. There's no reason that somebody should be dealing with me at my high rate when a paralegal can do it at a third of the cost on certain things. And the other thing is availability. You know, if you're having the worst day ever because X, Y, and Z happened in your matter and you need to talk to someone right then and there, if I'm in court, there's someone else always at my office at a lower rate that knows what's going on in your case and can walk you through it. So there's upside to having a team like that.
I think that what you just touched on is so important for so many people. They want to know that they're going to have access to someone, right? And I think that that's something that we didn't even talk about this, Max, before, but I think a question that would really help the client say is, what happens if I have to talk to somebody and you're in court? And if I have to leave you a message, what's the typical turnaround time? And how do you prefer to communicate? Do you want me to call you? Is it better with an email? If I send you a text, if this attorney gives out their cell, you know, like just, I mean, and Morgan, you and I talked about this exact topic. I think it was either last season or in our first season. Do you remember that when we were giving out pointers, like for ways that the client can best communicate with their attorney? Yeah. And I think that all of this is so important. It's all coming together. But Max, let's get to the third point that you made to me that somebody absolutely must hear from their prospective attorney. This one has two angles, and this is the part about whether you filed or you're responding to the filing. So go ahead and tell me about that.
Correct. So it's critical that you understand the relationship that your attorney has with his or her colleague when it comes to the other party and their attorney, right? So in other words, I have found over the years that it is incredibly helpful to have a good relationship with the attorney on the other end. And it almost always, if not always, benefits the client, okay? And that's something to know. There are plenty, by nature of the profession that we have, it's a very contentious profession, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fighting. And so some lawyers naturally, and I've been guilty of this in the past, we take it personally at times when we shouldn't. And so it's important to understand when you're interviewing lawyers, how their relationship is with the other lawyer. So there's kind of two components to this, right? If your husband or wife is filing, has already filed for divorce and you've been given the papers and you need to go find an attorney, every single potential client should ask a lawyer, how is your relationship with X, right? Mm-hmm. And if they say, I can't stand the guy, this, that, and the other, it's not that you shouldn't hire that lawyer, but you need to understand the climate of the divorce
right. That's
ultimately going to happen, because the lawyers are like the place markers. They're going to set the climate, right? The parties are going to make the decisions, but ultimately the lawyers are going to set the climate. So you need to understand that. And the best thing you can hear, and I mean this, is he's a good lawyer. I get along well with him. We'll be able to get this done.
Yep. Morgan, okay. I've heard you say this so many times.
I'm dying over here. I feel like Max is literally on my same wavelength over here. And what I want our listeners to know is it matters so much. So for instance, when I go into a client meeting, if I never talk poorly about somebody else on the other side. But I will say that they're, like Max said, this is a really contentious area of law. We get a bad rap. So what I will say to some people, there are a few people on the other side that I do not care for. I don't like the way they practice. And I don't think that me on the other side with my personal issues with them would be a good fit. I've turned clients away. I say, you know what? I don't get along with this person. This is not going to be helpful for your bottom line or your pocketbook, because it's just going to get more contentious. So I'm going to give you to somebody else. I'm going to refer you out. It's just not a good idea. Good lawyers should do that. But like Max said, when they say, oh, that person's, you know, great lawyer, that shouldn't scare you. That should be like, oh, we get along. Great. We can work this out.
From personal experience, I can say that I've had that happen. I interviewed an attorney whom I really wanted to work with, who said, this isn't going to work because of this. And I didn't understand it at the time, right? I'm like, what do you mean? Now I do. The other thing that I think it's important to think about, and again, this is coming from the woman who's gone through a divorce, you don't want this to be contentious. Regardless of all of this stuff, it's a sucky process, right? That's why our show is called How Not to Suck at Divorce, because it sucks. But you want the attorneys to want to have a mutual respect and understanding and think, okay, how do we keep these two people out of court as much as possible, if that's possible? Let's get this thing done. And you would want two people who get along to do that. If the attorneys don't even get along and you and your soon-to-be ex aren't getting along, how the hell is anything going to get resolved? It makes so much sense to me. I think this is what I love about us, really, Morgan, is I love that I think that this information is so important, and I want people to really know this, because especially breaking it down in three things, right? Three things. Well,
I mean, this is the behind the scenes look at what goes on with divorce lawyers. And you're not going to get this information anywhere else. And the fact that I'm in Chicago and Max is in Miami and we have the exact same thoughts, I mean, that says something right there. So let's keep going, because I think you had a second angle. Is that right?
Absolutely. So if you are the individual who wants to initiate the process and file for divorce, you don't have the benefit of knowing who's on the other side of the case, but you do have the benefit of asking what I believe is a critical question for any potential client to ask, which is how do you intend to approach this case? And what type of tone would you like to set? What do you believe is effective? Because it's important to understand that. So I explain to my clients, for example, that I personally much prefer to prepare very vanilla pleadings. There's no reason to irritate the other person when you're about to negotiate with them and ask for the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Can you illustrate for people who don't know what that means? What would be an example of a vanilla pleading versus a rocky road?
So that's a really good question. So there's something, at least in Florida, and I'm sure in other states, called dissipation, for example, right? When you use marital monies for a non-marital purpose at a point when a marriage is undergoing an irretrievable breakdown, okay? What that means is essentially when you're wasting marital resources or monies, and a very good and common example is having a paramour, right? Or someone on the side who your husband or wife is in a relationship with while you're married, and they're buying Chanel bags or they're buying whatever. And so something that I would prefer, or I would try to convince a client not to do, is to put in the pleading that Mr. Philip X went to a Motel 6 right after a family dinner and charged $312 at the mini bar and at this, that, and the other doing.
A lot of money for a Motel 6.
So really the money, in that example, the money is on the extracurriculars. Okay. It's not on the actual hotel. Remember, I'm in theme right now. It's a Howard Stern show. Okay. So, I have to be consistent, but those are things that the client really wants you to talk about. I want you to put in the pleading that I busted him with his pants down in the garage, right, you know, with the housekeeper, right, or something of that nature. And the fact is, it's not constructive. You need to understand that it's a marathon, not a sprint. There's a lot of strategy involved with it. Okay. And I'll give you a perfect example. Credibility is critical to these judges. Okay. If you know about an extramarital affair, for example, and you don't say anything and you don't mention it in your pleadings, and then you take the other party's deposition, you ask them if they've been faithful, it may not be so relevant to the case. But once they say, I have been faithful, and you know they haven't, and you have proof, now you can destroy that person's credibility on the stand and things that actually matter to your case. For example, in other instances, now the other side is at a huge disadvantage to the judge because they don't have credibility that otherwise, if you would have said something in the beginning or just given everything you had, you may not have that benefit. They would have the hindsight of being able to modify their answer.
And just to clarify something, what you just described, is that something that's across the board throughout the whole country and world, or is that only in states where there's not a no-fault situation?
So for example, Florida is a no-fault situation, okay, but again, okay, we have this concept of dissipation, which again, depends on the state that you have, but that's okay, just one example, right? Another example may be that I may talk about the fact that, like, I'll give you another example, time sharing, right? Or contact and access, custody, however—
Parenting time.
Exactly, okay, anything that we call it, right? In that type of situation, plenty of clients will tell me, oh, he was a horrible dad, he wasn't involved, he doesn't know the names of this, that, and the other. It's very easy for me to put that all in a pleading. But if I do that, again, the first thing that the spouse is going to do is go learn the names of the teachers, the shoe size of the child, answers that. Right. Now my wife has heard me speak to enough clients on the cell phone to know what to ask me, okay, if we get divorced, to make me look like a bozo, all right? But these are questions that really are not that fair to a parent that is not necessarily so involved and delegates to the other parent, but you use that when you need to. So I believe, this is what I tell clients. I say, it's kind of like when you're a child and you want a toy. Okay. If you want a toy, you need to behave well, because if you don't behave well, your parents aren't going to want to get you anything. So when you're negotiating and you understand that a huge component of this process is a negotiation, you want to keep every option available. You don't want to irritate the other person that you're negotiating with so that they're not thinking rationally, or so that they don't necessarily wake up and say, you know what, maybe he or she isn't entitled to that, but I feel like it's the right thing to do. Let me go over and above. And you're making it easy for them not to do that if you say things that frankly aren't necessary or just unjustified.
I just want to hit on one thing, and I agree with what Max is saying there. In Illinois, you know, the first petition that you file is called a petition for dissolution of marriage or a divorce filing, right? There's a way to really piss off the other side, and there's a way to make it vanilla. And that's something you want to talk to your divorce attorney about. So for instance, one example in Illinois is a way probably to piss off anybody is if you say, basically, for lack of a better term, you're a crappy parent. I want sole custody, 100% of the time sharing, the end. That's not the right way to start the case, in my opinion, in most times. What we could say instead is, hey, we should go and have joint parenting or joint decision-making, joint custody. But if we can't agree, then I will be asking for sole decision-making. That's a much nicer tone to set than going in guns blazing. Because if you go in guns blazing right off the bat, you're going to get guns blazing back. So you have to be careful for what you wish for, right?
And you also have nowhere to go.
Right.
If you enter the room at a level 10, there's no crescendo. You're just, and I think also exactly what Max said, why would you start a conversation? It's like walking into a room and screaming at somebody.
right out of the gate instead of saying, hey, can we talk about this? It's like walking in the room. Why you, mother? You know, it's like, well, of course we're going to get conflict back. I think that that's so interesting. And I'm thinking back, it's not something that would have occurred to me to ask an attorney, what's your style? How do you handle situations like this? Now, one more thing I want to ask you. I'm trying to think of the right way to ask this. What would be a tip off to a client that an attorney might say that would lead you to think, oh, this guy might come at people guns blazing? Is there something that people could be aware of that would kind of help them understand? Because I don't know that somebody would come right out and say, yeah, I'm going to hit him over the head right from the start. I mean, do they? I don't know.
Well, so I would say, and I want to hear what Max's answer is, one of the things that should send off red flags is if you're saying, I want to be amicable, I want to do this the right way, and the attorney is pushing back on you and saying, oh, no, this is how we're going to do it. Because there's a way to meet both parties' goals, or both the attorney and the client's goals, meaning the way to accomplish things without blowing up the entire case. And so you have to meet in the middle. So if you don't feel like your lawyer is hearing you on what tone you have to take, then you have to go find another lawyer, because truly there are some lawyers that are only blow up the world litigation minded, and that may not be the right fit for your case. Max, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, I hopefully a lot of my opponents, although they already know this trick, but hopefully they're not listening to this. But I, like, for example, I have plenty of clients that would like for the process to be amicable. And of course, I'm a huge proponent of that as well. I've learned that it will certainly slow down my graying process, at least. And so one of the effective things that an attorney can do, or as a client, you should look to see if your attorney is willing to do, is to be aggressive in setting the pieces on, like to setting all the chess pieces in place, but putting yourself in a position to mediate or resolve your case before you go down that road of litigation. A perfect example is setting depositions before you mediate, but to occur after you mediate. Filing motions for temporary support or other things so that your attorney is advocating for you, but having those hearings occur after mediation so that you're still focused on this amicable approach that allows you the opportunity to minimize expense, but really maximize results. Because your spouse is going to inherently know that if they don't want to cooperate or be fair or reasonable or resolve matters at mediation, they have depositions lined up, they have hearings lined up, and they have other things that really are going to add a little bit of pressure to resolve it. Some lawyers may not even give their client that opportunity if the client doesn't know to look for that or necessarily to ask for it. So it's important to understand, you, if you would like to have an amicable process, you can still take a litigious approach, but you should always afford yourself the opportunity to resolve matters before you go down the litigation road completely.
All this legal jargon that you two are throwing around is making me picture these conversations happening like between the client and the attorney. Given that we named this episode Tinder for Attorneys, I'm picturing it like happening like on a date type setting. Like you're sitting there in like a dimly lit bar, you know, and the attorney's like trying to be professional. And like, let's just say me, for example, like holding a cocktail, leaning over, cleavage, you know, like the whole bit, like, so tell me, how litigious are you? Tell me about your tone for this. You going to come in the room guns blazing? It's just the attorney being so uncomfortable.
Too bad these conversations actually occur mostly in brightly lit conference rooms.
Oh, man. Well, a divorced girl can dream, can't she? Let's move this conversation, Max, into the don't part. Now, you gave me some food for thought on questions that make attorneys a little bit cuckoo, because they're crazy questions that are almost impossible to answer. What are these questions that clients should avoid unless they want to be imitated at attorneys' happy hours?
So the one that drives me nuts is it actually one that I'm not sure if we discussed or if I brought up, but it really drives me the most nuts, which is, are you a pit bull? I need a pit bull.
That's something that I see Morgan just gasp because
God, that's the worst. Like, first of all, never say that. Never look for a pit bull. Like, that just means open your bank account and just let it just be drained.
Is it bad that made me think of Pitbull the singer? And I went and I'm like,
he is from Miami. So, you know.
Well, and full world. I don't know if you know this, Morgan, but Pitbull was here last night. He played at Ravinia last night. So we're just bringing the Miami, the Pitbull, Dale. Okay. But we're not talking about, are you Pitbull the singer? We're saying, are you a Pitbull?
Yeah. Unfortunately, when they hear my voice, they know that I'm not the Pitbull. Okay. I may be a Pitbull, but I'm not the Pitbull. Unfortunately.
You're not, but that's the whole idea. We're not. And you don't tell me why I can imagine, but tell me why that particular question is so irritating.
Because Morgan just touched on it. I mean, it's an incredibly cost prohibitive approach towards trying to resolve your matters. Not only that, but it's psychologically damaging, could be psychologically damaging to the client and very traumatizing. It's, you know, what people don't really understand is that it's not that divorce lawyers are like heartless. I mean, maybe we have like a smaller heart or a more hollow heart than others. That may be true.
Oh gosh.
But we're used to the conflict, right? And so for us, that's a very comfortable situation. But for the client, it's not. So if they want a pit bull, quote unquote, besides the cost and the trauma, the attorney can probably stomach it, but the client can't. It also doesn't, I believe, the attorney is not generally focused on how to maximize results if they're focused on being a pit bull, because sometimes you may need to be a pit bull to maximize results. That's the name of the game. When someone calls Morgan or me, our mind is thinking, how can we get the best results? Not how can we take a scorched earth approach and make sure that, you know, that we take everything, including the shirt on the back, because by the way, that process may take 4 or 5 years. Okay. And now your kids
Morgan,
are subjected.
Say that. Let's go over that again. Cause I think that what you just said is so freaking important. So say it, let's say that 10 more times, Morgan, go for it.
Well, I guess I don't want to go for it. I want Max to say it 10 more times. Max, summarize. And then because I don't want to misplace your words. And then I want to tell them exactly what I think about that too.
Oh, okay.
No, Morgan, you can go. You're much more artful than me. It's okay.
Here's what Max is saying, guys. This is a divorce is a chess match. Okay. You don't come out with the same moves in every divorce. A good divorce lawyer is going to be able to go scorched earth pit bull at any point if they need it. Mm-hmm. But if they don't need it, you hold it back because it's a giant waste of money. And it does deter from the overall settlement. Because think of it, if you're constantly filing motions and responding to nasty letters and emails and all this nonsense and prepping for court, are you really focused on like looking at the balance sheet and saying what's best for your kids? You're not. You're prepping for the next date or the next thing. So it's a chess match and you don't move the same amount every time.
From a person who went through its angle, I think it's also important to keep in mind, you don't feel good when you're in that zone. It's not a feel good moment. Yeah. You have that moment of, yeah, hell yeah, take that. But then when you walk away, it's empty. It's yucky. It's not really serving you. For your mental health standpoint, keep in mind, you don't want somebody who's like that. And like you both said in different ways, if it's necessary, and yeah, you might have a case where at some point it's necessary for people to get a little bit more, I don't want to say aggressive, but really stand ground and say, no, here you go, buddy. You know, F around and you'll find out. But you don't want to enter the room with that. Moving on though to something else. Oh wait, Morgan, did you have anything else to add before I ask him about the next don't?
No, just remember it's a chess match.
The next don't has to do with money. So give me that money question that makes you nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it makes me nuts, it's just impossible to answer,
right?
Which is how long is this process going to take and how much is it going to cost? And by the way, those are two questions that frankly every potential client should ask their lawyer, because it doesn't hurt to hear their answer, but you need to understand, and this is what I was explaining to Andrea the other day when we spoke, that lawyers like to give answers, or good lawyers like to give answers that they have, like, that they're pretty confident is accurate, or they have a good idea that it's, you know, of what they're saying. And there's too many variables. So for example, from the time component, you not only have another lawyer on the other side that may ask and typically does ask for extensions of time, more time, but you have a party that, like, you know, a person that is going to have good days and bad days, whether it's the husband or the wife or the father or the mother, right? And then you have the judges, and the judges are slammed, and it takes months to get hearings. And then if you want to resolve a case and go to mediation, it takes months to make sure that the attorney and the other attorney and then the mediator are available. And then if you have busy clients, so there are a lot of variables. So every time I give the same answer, because I like to think that that's the average time, but I've never taken out a calculator or analyzed every case to know exactly what the average time frame is. And the same with the cost, right? It depends on the track record and where it goes.
You know why this question is a little annoying to me, besides the fact that I never know, I don't have a crystal ball. It's annoying because you can't settle the case alone. If you were bringing me a settlement agreement with your spouse that day that you met with me, I could tell you right away how fast it's going to be. But again, you can't settle it alone. There takes two sides. So without knowing where everybody's going, there's no way that a good divorce lawyer can tell you 100% when your case is going to finish.
I remember when I went through it, I asked a question about the different paths it could take, because I knew better. I knew that I couldn't walk into somebody's office and say, all right, when am I going to be divorced? But I knew that I wanted some kind of a roadmap. And I think that that's fair, right? Anybody going through a divorce, we're looking to an expert for a roadmap, right? Yep. So I think, is that a fair question, you guys, to say, how would you help a client get that and out without asking something that you can't answer?
So I think a much better question, which again, will actually test the acumen of your lawyer and allow you to really gauge whether it's the right fit, is not to necessarily say how long is the process going to take, but if you'd like for it to be a quick process, hey, Max, how can you ensure that it's going to be an expeditious process? And then I can explain to the potential client, here are some of the strategies. Let's put court-ordered deadlines in place, right? So that we have to get these deadlines in. Let's get a mediation scheduled in 3 months, 4 months, but let's put that in a court order. So let's start putting markers down on this map so that there's pressure to sit there and make sure you get to each point within a time frame, because otherwise it's like a body of water. It's very fluid. If you don't have your markers in place, there's no telling how long it's going to take. So the better strategy is asking the lawyer, how can you help me move this along? What ideas do you have in mind? Right.
And that's here's another thought attached to that. Why don't you also ask the attorney, what can I do? Mm-hmm. What are things that are in my bucket, right? Isn't this the whole Kennedy thing? Like, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, right? How do I help? What are things that clients do that hold up cases, and what can I do? Because shit, I wish I would go back in time. I could have asked that, right? Because like what you said, Morgan, it takes two. Well, it takes like four, right? You've got both sides attorneys, and then you've got the two people.
And a judge or a mediator.
Yep. A lot of people getting divorced.
Right.
A lot of people.
Okay, Max, give us your last thing that annoys you, bad question-wise, and then we're moving on.
Well, I think those are generally the big ticket items. I think that, you know, anytime that the focus for me is not really on the results or on actually like the important points, it's not that it irritates me. It's just, I find myself continuously trying to redirect the client. And if they're not listening to you, then, and the lawyers actually know that, because we have a lot of conversations by nature of our job. And when you're speaking to a client or a potential and they're just like not on the same page at all and just ignoring or asking questions that aren't related, you kind of realize, do they really need me? Right. Morgan and I can charge $1,000 an hour, but if someone's not listening to our advice, or at least like processing it, we're not really of much use. So I think that it's important when you are meeting with a potential lawyer or you're interviewing that you can be the one to dictate the direction of the conversation. I enjoy spending, like, let's say half of the meeting educating the client and then just saying, "What? Let's talk. Like, what questions do you have or what direction would you like to go?" But have that conversation with the lawyer and see what you're comfortable with. I will tell you that if you, you know, going on the Tinder theme, if you are connecting with your lawyer at the beginning of your case, oftentimes that's a really good sign. If you're not connecting with your lawyer, or likewise, if you feel like they're not really listening to you, that's probably a pretty common thing. And that means that they're probably not your lawyer, because if they're not listening to you when they want your business and they want you to hire them, I'm not so sure that they're going to listen to you more once you've now signed a retainer agreement and you're obligated to pay them.
I agree. All about those connections, people. Got to have
a connection. Yeah. And that brings me into my point, which is it's important that we mention that the attorney-client relationship is exactly that. It's a relationship. Now, yes, you creepy people listening, it's not a romantic relationship. However, but still, it has to work for both parties. So just like a romantic relationship, there's going to be some give and take for both sides to make the relationship work. And you do need to get to know each other in order to understand where both sides are coming from.
It's exactly true. Speaking of romantic relationships, blending in with the world of legal, what if, I'm getting a crazy idea. What if there was some way where we could merge the legal world, which is very sexy as is. I just have to say, between the three of us here, wow, hot stuff we talked about. But what if we made it hotter by merging the legal world with the dating world? And we turned your LinkedIn profiles into like dating bios, where we could have different pictures of you guys. Like, it's like Morgan in the office, Morgan on the beach. What does Morgan like to do for fun? Max, I'm getting some ideas for you. I don't know like where you stand right now, like in your LinkedIn world, but if you're ready to go in a different direction, hang on, let me think about this. Let me get the juices flowing. Think that I can help you out. Your profile, Max, picture you like a really flattering pose. Maybe it's you and a golden retriever, because everybody likes golden retrievers, right? Oh, he likes dogs. I love dogs. It could say this. I'm a straight shooter who's here for those personal connections. We'll get along great if you like detailed invoices and someone who gets along with opposing counsel. But don't ask me about cost, girl. We in this for the long haul.
I feel like you just read that off of my LinkedIn page. Isn't that already there, or it's not there?
It hasn't been approved yet, but I'm glad that you
It's being processed in HR. I envision myself more of like, with like, not that this is like commensurate to the service, but like I have a theme I tell clients all the time. I say, oh, it's like service, Leinoff and Lemos, PA, we're all about service with a smile. I would have like a nice little tray. I'd have a nice little tray of like French fries and a McDonald's hamburger with one of those like, one of those little paper hats, you know, that they wear at Burger King, not the crown, but the guy that's actually flipping the burger. That's, I feel like, my picture, like with a corny smile and the tray out with some French fries. Meet Max Leinoff. I'm all about service with a smile.
Okay. Oh, I don't even know what to do about this. Between you and Andrea, I'm totally going to change all my passwords so nobody can get a hold of it, because you guys are freaking me out.
Well, Morgan, I've got some bad news for you. Homegirl's got your password, and we're going to make some changes. And I think you're going to thank me later. I know you. At first, you're going to be like, this isn't professional. Nobody wants to see this, but Morgan, the world does. And I see good things happening for you, girl. I see you squirming over there. I can tell you're uncomfortable.
I'm wondering if you were the person that hacked my Instagram account a few months ago.
Dang, I knew you were going to bring that up. Why are you always going to bring that up? No, I was not the person who hacked your Instagram. That would not serve me in any way. Now, some more interesting pictures on your LinkedIn, but we'll talk. Oh my gosh. Okay. Max, you're a doll. I have loved every single minute of this conversation. We're not done with you. I have a few more minutes of your time, and I'm going to make you play a surprise game with us. But before we do, because I have a feeling after I make you go through this, you're going to jump off this call and I'm never going to see you again. So before that happens, tell everybody in the world, BTW, we have an international audience, so know that. Where can people find you if they want to know more about your magical world of family law?
Sure. So they can find me in my office about 23 and a half hours a day for about 6 days a week. Then when I'm out of the office, I'm either walking my golden doodle, who's the only one that likes me in my house, or I'm getting screamed at by my wife. Okay. So it's one or the other. That's where they would find me. But my email address is max@llpa.com, like Larry, Pennsylvania Avenue. And anyone can email me. They can reach me. I'm always accessible. I will probably CC Morgan to make sure that she has to answer every question that I get from you guys, but I'm more than happy to speak to anyone. And obviously, you know,
you're going to get questions. More, and Morgan's very good at answering questions. But speaking of your wife is a very talented artist. And your wife actually texted me and said, if you don't give me a shout out on this show, I'm taking you all down. So we got to give, let's give your wife the shout out she deserves. Go for it.
Thank you. I always tell my wife, at least one of us is happy living out our dreams. Okay. So my wife is a professional artist. Her name is Katie, K-A-T-Y. Her Instagram handle is Katie, K-A-T-Y, Alana, I-L-A-N-A. She is an excellent artist. She's done commercials for Vans, and she was just on the Ralph Lauren website. But she does what I believe is like very warm and comforting art, a lot of family themed art, a lot of commissions. So it's especially helpful for a crowd like this who, you know, when you're going through a difficult process, what you need more than anything is your family, right? Even if you may not want your spouse or your soon to be former spouse, your kids or your cousins or your siblings or your parents, those are the people that matter. So I do think she's excellent. She's much cooler than me. And you're all more than welcome to reach out to her. She'll tell you how much of a joy it is to be married to a divorce lawyer like me, who, by the way, is all about service with a smile, if I haven't mentioned.
Okay, I just looked her up while you're just giving us her Instagram handle. Her stuff is amazing, and she's adorable, and your family's on there. Everything's adorable.
Aww.
Thank you. I continue to get like random police reports that I'm burning down the house when I'm not, because she's public, so everyone knows to go through my wife to then ruin my life. So it's really good. It's a very nice combination of having a very private life on my end and a very public life of my wife. It's a good combination.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll make sure to give her handle in the show notes of this episode so that everybody can go and follow her and harass you through wife. Speaking of harassing, it's my favorite time of the show, because today, Max, we always end the show with like a special segment. Typically, it's a segment that Morgan wants to do, which is called Let's Be Positive, where we share these like positive stories from the internet. It kind of makes me gag, but she loves it. And I'm here for it. My favorite ending is a game that we play called Spin the Wheel. It's the podcast game that has swept the nation. Morgan, are you not ready to play Spin the Wheel?
Definitely not ready.
Where we spin a wheel and whatever it lands on, we have to do the challenge.
Oh no.
Morgan hates it, which I understand why, because usually I'm the one spinning. Today, it's her turn. She's spinning. It's up to you and me, Max, to fulfill her dreams of embarrassing us on this episode of the podcast. Morgan, are your little fingers ready to spin?
I am ready to spin it. And Okay. Actually, this is the first episode that we have actually invited a guest to entertain Spin the Wheel. So Max, I know you didn't know it was coming, but I couldn't tell you in advance. So I'm spinning this, and whatever it lands on, you got to do. So are you ready?
I can't wait.
Okay, Morgan, give us your spin.
Spinning. Oh.
Why am I so nervous right now?
Okay. All right. Today it has landed on one of my favorites. It's a sing-along. And
what? Yeah. What do you mean? What?
Howard's not a good singer.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. You
one of my favorites. Thing. That's such a lie, because Morgan, if you got this one, you would opt out. So I love that it's one of your favorites when it's not for you.
Totally. That's just how I roll. So anyway, back to this, it's singing. And what you have to do this time is sing your favorite TV show jingle. But this week, I'm just going to ask Andrea to pop in if she knows the song.
Oh, no.
Okay, so I'm backup singer. I'm backup singing mm-hmm. for Max. Max, I feel like we need like a private Zoom to decide what we're going to do.
Don't hit me with like the Barbie girl anthem, okay?
No, I'm not. Wait, all hold right, on. I'm
don't do
you.
Me like that.
No. I ain't going to put you out on Front Street. You are giving me the song. That's what she just said. You pick.
Oh, I support song.
You. Yeah.
Ooh.
Let's do a throwback though.
Maybe like a Brady Bunch type of thing.
All right, fine. Ooh, I like it because it involves families. Look at you.
All right, let's start okay, it. What you're starting. You
do I get like the lyrics or not?
No,
you have to know the lyrics.
Oh, well then can we do like, oh, that's tough. Well, I have to like pull up the-
That's easy, are you kidding me? Here's a story of a lovely lady. How do you not know the lyrics of the Brady Bunch?
I just remember the football hitting, was it Marsha? Marsha in the face? That was it for me. I don't have the lyrics in front of me. I honestly feel like Andrea would do an excellent job singing that song.
Only I've been rehearsing it. It's the, here's a story.
Of a
lovely attorney who was Zooming with me and Morgan about law. No, okay, here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three kids of her own. Is that how it goes?
Should we do the Jetsons song instead?
Should we do a what?
Should we do the Jetsons song instead?
Oh, yeah.
We can do the Jetsons.
Start it. I'll join you.
What is it? We are the Jetsons. Meet the Jetsons.
No, that's the Flintstones. You just say Flintstones to Jet. This is crashing and burning.
I gotta cut this off because I gotta put people out of their misery here. I'm over here like sweating for you. It's awful.
Flintstones. Meet the Flintstones.
And my dog Elroy.
His
dog Elroy. There you go. See, I remember part of it.
Okay. Oh. I actually laughed at that one. Thank you. You were really, really tanking this section of our podcast.
I mean, this is a tough one. This is
you came in one. With Elroy at the end.
So as an aside, my wife always teases me because the one thing that I'm best at is botching song lyrics. I cannot get a song lyric correct. So it's almost as if you found my Achilles heel. I can't do it. I mean, thankfully I don't have to sing in the courtroom, but I can't do it.
It reminds me of one of my friends who at one point had a boyfriend who was super funny, a fellow Jewish guy. So, you know, love that. And instead of singing Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, he would sing Walking Around the Christmas Tree. And I thought, what a boring song that somebody would actually write a song about walking around a Christmas tree. But it's a gift. Max, speaking of gifts, your gift. Thank you. Thank you so much for playing our games, informing our listeners, and just being an all-around great guy.
It's really been a pleasure. And I want to say, I listened to a bunch of your podcasts before I came on because I needed to know what to expect. And you guys really do an excellent job.
You still came on. We appreciate that.
I did because I figured after we recorded, I probably wouldn't make the cut. But anyways, you guys are excellent. And I love what you're doing to the listeners. And I think that especially in a bunch of the podcasts I heard, there's really invaluable discussions that are real, most importantly. They're not sugarcoated. And the beautiful thing is that people have, the people that are on your podcast, they have the hindsight of speaking about these experiences after. And it allows them to give like a real story about what matters, not necessarily when you're caught up in the moment, but the things you take away from the process and what they believe is important. So I think it's excellent. Keep doing God's work. Okay. As long as you don't make me sing again, I'm happy. Okay. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
This reminds me of the time when we were told we're better than Oprah.
Right. It's
not just personal. Bringing it back. Thank you.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you guys for having me.
See, this is exactly why we do what we do, because what Max just said about our show, that we actually are helping people and he sees us as another divorce attorney just kind of melts my heart. And also, you know, this just brings us back to why we started this, because we love and appreciate every single one of you. And we know that divorce is hard. We know it's draining. And we know that the unknown can feel scary. And our goal is to offer some guidance and sometimes some humor.
That's exactly right. We ultimately want you to not suck at divorce. If you guys want more information about our show, go to our website, www.hownottosuckatdivorce.com. We also are on Instagram now. So you can pop over to Instagram and follow us at hownottosuckatdivorce.
And also, if you like us, please rate us and review us. Apparently that matters on podcasts. So we could really appreciate that. And listen, tell your friends about us, tell your book club, tell your ex. We don't care because we're here to help everybody.
That is absolutely true. And when you guys are struggling, know that we get it, because sometimes it is day by day or even hour by hour. We're with you.
Remember, you've got this and we've got you.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.